This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Don Berryman, who is Executive Vice President at Earthlink. Welcome to Etopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
We're not going to talk in a lot of detail because considerations are still underway there in Philadelphia, but could you just tell us about, in general terms, the participation of Earthlink in bids for the Wireless Philadelphia project, which I understand you're one of the three finalists in that competition right now?
That's correct, Mark. A couple of weeks ago, Philadelphia announced that Earthlink was one of three finalists in the bid process, and that hopefully their intention is to make a decision in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, now because it's ongoing, we can't really talk about that in particular.
That's
but
correct.
But I would like to talk about the technology that's offered in the Earthlink bid there, and we can talk about that in its own terms. What can you tell us about the architecture of the solution that you've bid there, and that you presumably have available for use in other locations as well?
Sure, Mark. We've spent about 2.5 years working on Wi-Fi technology and looking at these opportunities, and we've found the best technology mix for us, and our solution is the Tropos Wi-Fi cells connecting to the Canopy Motorola towers and then backhauling into the Earthlink network.
Okay, and why don't we go start at the bottom there. Tell us a little more about the Tropos radios and what they do and what kind of architecture that they're built into.
Well, I can tell you that the Tropos Wi-Fi cells that exist today in production in many municipalities around the country, probably some of the best engineered radios and certainly are in production in cities like Chaska, Minnesota, and Lafayette, Louisiana, and other cities around the country, mainly used today for emergency services like ambulance, police, and services like that. But they are absolutely a great Wi-Fi with tremendous engineering.
And are they part of what's called a mesh network?
They are, absolutely.
And tell our listeners who don't know yet what exactly a mesh architecture is.
Well, the mesh architecture places the towers around the city and connect to each other so that it feeds traffic into the network at the most efficient rate. So if you're in one area of the city and picked up by one tower, it can easily transmit to another tower and moves the traffic around. There's there usually are three in the mesh. One's used as a backhaul, so the three connect to each other, and the third is used as a backhaul into the network.
And it's a little bit like the architecture of the Internet itself in that data goes through the most efficient path
exactly.
to get where it's going.
It is. And they have some of the best technology in mesh that exists today.
Okay, now how does that connect to Canopy for Motorola, and what does the Motorola component contribute to the system?
Well, that connects then to a higher level Canopy system, which then is a direct point-to-point connection that then connects into either a fiber or some other kind of connection into the backhaul network, which would be the Internet.
Okay, and what are we talking about in terms of frequencies or standards? What do the Tropos networks use, and what technology does the Motorola Canopy use?
Well, I believe in this solution we're talking about 5.7 gigahertz.
Right.
And then at the local or below that, it goes into the 900 megahertz.
Okay. When we talk about the Motorola Canopy, are we talking about Wi-Fi, WiMAX, pre-WiMAX?
We're talking about Wi-Fi. It definitely is pre-WiMAX. WiMAX, although it's been talked about a lot, doesn't exist yet outside of test markets. And so, and certainly we feel like WiMAX technology to be commercial is at least a year to 2 years away.
Okay. And so the Motorola Canopy system itself uses Wi-Fi to essentially collect the signals from the Tropos radios.
Correct.
And then how does it insert it into the big Internet?
It backhauls it, like I said, either by fiber or some other connection into our network in this solution, obviously. We have point of presence POPs in all the major cities, one of the largest in the country, obviously being a internet service provider.
Right.
That we are. Earthlink has 5.3 million customers today. So we would just backhaul it into the closest POP.
Right.
In those cities.
Okay. Say a little, as much as you want, about the business relationship among the three companies, Earthlink, Motorola, and Tropos. Are you in a joint venture? Is somebody working for somebody else? What's the commercial structure there?
Sure. Today, Earthlink is the primary contractor,
right.
And we utilize that technology, Tropos and Motorola. So we are the ones that would submit the bid using that technology.
Okay, and then once it's built, who operates it, or what are the ongoing functions of Tropos, Motorola, and Earthlink in the ongoing operation?
Well, they're equipment providers to us.
Right.
Today, and we have a business partnership between the three companies,
right.
That exists for us to maintain the network and for them to provide equipment and services.
And you do, of course, all the customer relations and customer support and billing and whatnot.
Absolutely. That's something that Earthlink uniquely brings to the table, the J.D. Power winning customer service of Earthlink in broadband and dial-up for the past 3 years, and being in the business for over 11 years now, we supporting the 5.3 million customers we have, bring that great service to the table.
Okay. Now, we're, again, not going to talk in specifics about Philadelphia, but I would like to get an idea from you about where else or how widely else you're working on propagating Muni broadband solutions in the U.S. or, for that matter, anywhere else. But what's the general picture there? How active are you in seeking out or being sought out by other municipalities in terms of creating systems for them?
Sure. There are at least five other cities today that have RFPs either already distributed on the street or are contemplating RFPs through preliminary RFIs, request for information, which is a pre-RFP sign. And you know, this
is that, is that secret, or can you tell us who they are? Or something?
It is secret in that we're not releasing that list of cities.
Okay.
There is one that's already been published, and that is Minneapolis.
Okay. And are you involved? You submitted there?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And they're essentially saying four others of comparable size that are sort of under the radar to
that's
a certain
correct.
Extent. Okay. And are you essentially offering them the same architecture and different configuration that you've got in Philadelphia, or that you're proposing for Philadelphia?
We are. We are. Every city has their own needs, depending on what else they want to do. A big part of Philadelphia's proposal is to expand high-speed internet to those citizens within the city of Philadelphia that don't have that ability today, who have been somewhat ignored by the current providers to high speed. So they call the digital divide a big major part of their proposal in bringing this wireless network. It's more efficient and potentially offers their citizens a much lower cost high-speed broadband product.
Okay, so from your observations and participation here, what would you say the trends are nationwide in terms of Muni broadband right now at the beginning of August 2005?
Well, it's very interesting. It has this sort of similar beginnings to the whole internet, this grassroots swell that's coming from small towns that, again, have been somewhat ignored in terms of the investments of the providers today.
So, in fact, there's a digital divide both within big cities by income and by big cities to smaller towns that are somewhat left out of the internet process.
Absolutely. There was an article in a major news magazine a couple of weeks ago that claimed that 900 small towns have already built wireless networks of their own,
right?
And that there are another 600 to 800 that are proposing doing it. Now, those are mostly smaller towns, again, like Lafayette, Louisiana, like Granbury, Texas, like Chaska, Minnesota, that went out and did it themselves.
Okay.
And the bigger cities now are starting to. When Philadelphia really was the first, they announced it in October, I think, of last year,
right,
at the League of Cities. And since then, almost every major city has started a project to look at bringing Wi-Fi to their city.
Okay. Now, while starting at the same time in Pennsylvania, SBC, I'm sorry, Verizon and Comcast got together and lobbied in Harrisburg to pass legislation that would have prohibited Philadelphia from doing what it's doing. And due to grassroots lobbying and possibly the fact that the governor of Pennsylvania used to be the mayor of Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia was able to get a waiver from Verizon on the, on that. I guess the city had to negotiate with the phone company and did get a waiver to do that. Since then, other states have featured confrontations between phone companies and cable companies trying to stop municipal broadband and cities trying to protect their right to do it. And even more recently, this has moved to Washington, where, as I understand it, Senator Ensign of Nevada has a effort underway to call the Consumer Choice of 2005 Act, trying to prohibit cities from offering a muni broadband, and Senator McCain and Senator Lautenberg have a bill pending that would assert their right to do so. What's your view of all that, and what's Earthlink doing, if anything, to get involved in that political process around muni broadband?
That's a great question. It's a loaded question as well.
Well,
there is a lot going on. We think that the fact that the bells and the cable companies are pushing so hard to try to keep municipalities out of wireless broadband, it says a lot about its capability going forward.
It's essentially a strong endorsement of its technical and commercial viability.
Absolutely. If they didn't think it would work, they wouldn't be working so hard to keep it out of those.
But before we get back into more of this, how does Earthlink relate to cable companies and telephone companies? Do you work with them, against them, as part of what they're doing? What's your general relationship with those big providers?
Well, we basically have a great relationship with all of the phone companies and cable companies.
Right.
As you know, there was a recent Supreme Court decision in the Brand X decision that said that the cable companies did not have to open up their networks.
That's right. Did that affect you?
It does. We have.
And before you talk about how it affects you, there's also, of course, last Friday after the media had closed for the week, the FCC announced that it was instituting a policy of no access for competitive providers over telco plants either.
That's true. That being introduced into the FCC would obviously, there's going to be lots of discussion about that,
right?
Before it becomes before it becomes a decision,
right?
And we're confident that would take at least a year,
okay,
of a quiet period, so it wouldn't impact us today. But I think it just it certainly shows that we need alternative technologies into what's called the last mile,
right?
Into the home, since the phone companies and cable companies are protecting their investments in those markets. So to make sure that there are alternatives in the markets, that's why we're pursuing the municipal Wi-Fi.
Does Earthlink own any of those last miles anywhere else?
No.
Or are you in every case dependent on the phone company and the – and in other words, if you're dependent on the phone company or the cable companies, are you a subcontractor essentially of any of them now, or are you there as a competitor offering internet access alongside that which is being offered by the phone company or the cable company, which both of which now have the right not to let you do that?
Well, only the cable companies today have the right not to do it. It's only a suggested.
Oh, okay. All right. And are the cable companies ruling doing that, or did you used to be on cable companies as a competitive provider, and now you're being thrown out by Brand X, or what's happening with that?
We're not being thrown out. We have, because of the AOL Time Warner decision, Time Warner was forced to open up their networks, and we have a great relationship with Time Warner Cable and are in almost all of their markets nationwide offering our services.
And you offer them alongside Roadrunner.
Exactly.
But does the Brand X decision give Time Warner the right to exclude you?
That's a good question. Because of the AOL relationship still, I would say probably not.
Because you have a contract with AOL.
We have a contract with Time Warner.
Oh, with Time Warner to do that. Oh, so it's
open
not
up their network,
which you essentially reached through a negotiated settlement with them about.
Exactly. And We provide a lot of services that the cable providers don't, and so it actually offers their customers an alternative as well, and they're happy because they get to maximize their networks using other providers.
So are you saying that while Brand X says there's no duty of cable companies, they're free to do it if they want to?
Absolutely.
And you're saying that in many cases, because of Earthlink's attractive features, that they do want to do that?
That's a great point, and that's absolutely true.
Okay.
It just means that they aren't being forced to open
right.
up their networks.
Okay.
We're still negotiating agreements with all of them.
Oh, okay. But in any event, you wouldn't be averse to having an alternative way into people's homes through municipal broadband.
Well, I think the option is that when technologies advance and they're moving along and you're able to offer a improved technology at a lower cost, why wouldn't you pursue that?
Well, in fact,
we think that's what wireless...
Right. Could you find yourself in the position of competing against yourself through two channels if you're offering internet connectivity through a cable system and essentially overbuilding it with a Wi-Fi system and providing options through either or both of those conduits?
Sure, I think we can, and I think it'll be a while before Wi-Fi actually catches up to some of the cable technology, which is increasing speeds.
Right.
You know, some of them have up to 10 megs of capacity now on their networks, and even higher. And DSL 2X is improving the technology fast enough to where they're offering 10 megs of speed.
And what are the speeds that Wi-Fi might
well,
be offering?
Today we're limiting it at a little over 1 meg.
Right.
And so while it's still much faster than dial-up, it's not reaching the speeds yet. We see that technology improving pretty quickly, and it won't be much time before those speeds are able to be accelerated as well.
Okay. We've essentially been talking about internet connectivity, but obviously a broadband network allows for data exchange and voice over IP and video delivery. Say something about how that figures into your plans and whether you're going to become a content aggregator, content producer, and what kind of uses are you expecting that others or Earthlink itself will be making of these networks?
Well, I think it certainly utilizes all of what Earthlink has been building towards and becoming a total communications provider. The wireless network does offer high-speed internet access, as well as new Wi-Fi phones that would be coming out sometime next year that have connections that would say when you're in a Wi-Fi connection, your call goes over the internet.
Right.
It's going over the cellular network.
Right.
That's a huge opportunity, I think, for a network like this that exists in cities. And if you have multiple cities around the country or have agreements with those city networks, then you obviously could have a phone that uses, when you're in those cities, Wi-Fi connections over the internet with basically no charge then on the cell.
Don't go into too many details, but are you talking to or encouraging or working with companies that make Wi-Fi phones to facilitate that transition?
Well, we have a joint venture with SK Telephone
right.
called SK Earthlink.
Right.
So certainly that would be something that company would be looking at. And I don't know when that would come to market, but certainly that company, being a telephone provider in SK and an internet provider in Earthlink, would be something that would fit very well with that joint venture.
And in fact, those kind of things are essentially specialized laptops that have the form factor of, or digital devices that have the form factor of a cell phone, but transmit on the Wi-Fi frequency and use voice over IP to create the phone experience.
Correct.
Given enough bandwidth, they obviously could have video screens as well, couldn't they? And cameras in them and be transmitters of video information at the same time.
I think the speeds need to be increased, obviously,
right.
to do that. So the Wi-Fi network would be something when WiMAX comes out in a year or two
right.
Would help that speed a great deal.
Right. Before, you just said the scenario that you pictured there where people could use Wi-Fi phones and presumably be subscribed through Earthlink to a nationwide plan. would let them at the beginning use voice over IP to emulate a phone function, but in the same way that the iPod's getting a video screen in a few weeks, I understand, these Wi-Fi phones could become Wi-Fi video phones, requiring only an upgrade of the handset and a increase in speed in the network.
Oh, sure. That's a natural progression, I think, with the way voice over IP is going to have that. I could see somebody sitting in a park with their laptop and a headphone using voice over IP to conduct their business.
Right.
Sure.
Now, so this idyllic situation that we're talking about, though, is dependent on a lot of cities building out Wi-Fi municipal networks, and that, in some sense, is dependent on what happens in Washington. So why don't we wrap up by focusing on that, those questions, and what Earthlink's preferences are in terms of the legislative and regulatory framework under which you'd like to see in place going forward, and whether you're doing anything to lobby for your preferences.
Sure. There are two bills that we're aware of. One is Representative Sessions in Texas introduced a bill into the House to allow states to ban municipalities from building Wi-Fi networks and competing.
Right. That's H.R. 2726.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there's the McCain-Lautenberg bill in the Senate that was introduced that would do just the opposite, which would prevent states from banning Wi-Fi networks in municipalities.
So these two, which would you prefer to see pass?
Well, obviously, we would enjoy the opportunity to have municipalities providing networks like that so we could participate in those networks.
Now, I understand, though, Senator Ensign of Nevada, though, has introduced a more broadly oriented bill, of which I read at least one place yesterday that Senator McCain is a co-sponsor, which I found interesting, and which may supersede the provisions of both the Sessions bill and the Lautenberg-McCain bill. What can you say about the internal politicking in Congress about how that issue is going to be formatted and how it's likely to play out there?
Well, obviously there'll be a lot of lobbying going on. There's a big lobby with the phone companies and cable companies today that exist, and so we're certainly for anything that would provide a much more efficient, lower cost access to the internet in these cities and these municipalities. And I think the technology now has gotten to the point where investment in that allows higher speeds at lower costs. And so, in supporting that, I think what will happen is probably those bills would all be combined in some sort of either a combination bill or a telecommunications rewrite or something like that in the session towards the end of this year or next year, where all of these would be able to be hashed out. But it's hard to support something that that restricts free trade and a lower cost to consumers. And so I think that we would find ourselves certainly in supporting the municipalities.
What do you say about the argument of the opponents of municipal broadband that it's an unfair subsidy by taxpayers in competition with good old private enterprise?
Well, I think there certainly is a good argument saying there should be some sort of oversight in taxpayers' dollars competing against private enterprise. But I think what I would suggest is that we wait and see how these networks come out and see who owns them and who invests in them and how they're structured.
And in terms of timetable, you're saying that you expect there may be some action on this by the end of the year or next?
It looks like there may be something introduced that would combine all of those in Congress, and I think that's what we're certainly lobbying for.
Although obviously when you combine a bill that outlaws some or gives states the ability to prohibit and another one that denies states the ability to prohibit, it's going to be pretty hard to compromise those two issues, those two positions, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although they're pretty skilled at compromise sometimes over there on Capitol Hill.
Well, usually when you start off with opposite ends of the spectrum like that, the compromise is something that you can end up working with.
Well, what would you envision as a possible compromise of those two positions that would allow and disallow states to prohibit municipal broadband.
I think a combination of municipal support of networks that are privately owned would probably make a lot of sense.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look forward to seeing that possibly and other developments. And I want to say I hope we can talk again as this moves forward and see where Earthlink is and get your views on the general situation.
I appreciate it.
And in the meantime, thank you very much for talking to us today on Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
It was my pleasure, Mark.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks.